taking a little time to think on these things. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And Barry, I can't tell you today is a pleasure breaking down this election, but it will certainly be interesting, let's put it that way. And I think we'll probably have a little bit of fun along the way. So if some of the chuckles that we've gotten from some of the idiocy that we've read so far is any indication, at least you and I will get a laugh out of it if nobody else does.
Well, you know, Chuck, as most people know, well, first of all, as we've been announcing all week, today is going to be our election analysis show. We're going to be breaking down the good, the bad, and the ugly, mainly the ugly, from Tuesday's national election. And I guess the first thing we're going to break down, Chuck, is the fact that Tuesday's election showed a reduction in the number of actual votes cast, especially for the two major party candidates, by almost 11 million votes. Barack Obama received about 8 million votes less, total popular vote less than what he had taken in 2008, and Mitt Romney received a little over 2 million fewer votes than John McCain had received in 2008, showing that for all of the hype about this being the most important election of our lifetimes, that message didn't really resonate with about 11 million voters who had voted in 2008. Now, it's a possibility, Chuck, that we've just had that much attrition and that many people have died in this country in the last 4 years. Or maybe it is partially due to the fact that you had a number of people who finally have gotten fed up and decided that neither of the major candidates or any of the minor party candidates, for that matter, measured up. There could be a number of reasons for that, but I just found it interesting just off the top of the head as we're seeing these numbers come in and things are starting to be parsed, that you had such a slough off between the 2008 and the 2012 election. I don't know. It seemed like that possibly there was just something missing this time around.
Well, yeah. And what was missing was, 11 million voters, and I don't think they all died.
No, I don't think they did either.
I'm pretty sure they didn't all die. I'm sure, well, obviously 11 million people have died between 2008 and 2012, but there have been some replacements to take their place. And apparently some of those replacements, if they did die, decided not to vote. And the reasons for that should be fairly clear. You know, again, Barry, you and I have been accused of being sort of naysayers, you know, everybody, you guys are always criticizing. Well, yeah, we are, and because there's a lot to criticize, but we also have some positive things to say. But nobody ever wants to listen to that. That being said, this was a case of Socialist Party A versus Socialist Party B, and Socialist Party A won. And everybody kind of looked at that, and there are some surveys out there that are showing that that seems to have been the sentiment. Now, what you're getting a lot of is the experts, quote unquote, the experts. I've heard nothing but experts in the last couple of days talking to me about why the Republicans lost this election, this presidential election. And the reason is, in every case, is that the reason that the Republicans lost is that they're not more like Democrats. In other words, in order to become electable, a Republican presidential candidate will have to become more socialistic, more openly pro-illegal immigration, more openly pro-abortion, more openly pro-socialism, the welfare state. And in fact, if anyone paid any attention at all to Mitt Romney, he was paying homage through the whole campaign to every one of the, now, well, of course, the whole pro-abortion thing, there was a major smokescreen on that through the entire campaign, as we've talked about. Mitt Romney isn't pro-life, never was pro-life, and basically began to show his true colors on the life issue later on in the campaign with some of the ads that we played right here on our radio show and analyzed, where we conflated abortion and contraception. That being said, a lot of people just in the pro-life, in the Republican supposedly values voters, people just simply wanted to ignore all the evidence. And when we'd bring it up, they'd say, well, that's a counterfeit. And of course, at the end, it's Mitt Romney saying, "This is Mitt Romney, and I approve this message." And it was played in major markets because we were able to get it off YouTube. So there's just a lot of nonsense floating around out there. And I would contend that what really should have happened, and what's amazing to me that didn't happen still, is that the Values Voters Coalition should have done what they promised to do in December of last year and say, if Mitt Romney is the nominee, I'm not going to be involved.
Ah, but we had exactly the opposite of that, that when Mitt Romney became the nominee, that entire coalition jumped at the end of lockstep and got behind him and started saying he's wonderful and even started recreating history in order to avoid looking at the truth of his record that he was not pro-life. Because, and we can explain this more if you want us to, ladies and gentlemen, but there is a major difference between the term, with the term pro-life as used in the evangelical lexicon versus as used in the Mormon lexicon. Those two have entirely different definitions, to the point that if an evangelical looked at the real definition of what Mormonism means by pro-life, they wouldn't consider it to be pro-life. But, Chuck, the thing that I wanted to look at here, more specifically, boiling it down, because obviously we're here in Ohio, and Ohio is, you know, ground zero of everything, and Ohio went for Barack Obama. And interesting, you know, that Barack Obama even won what was historically conservative bastion areas like Hamilton County, which is the Cincinnati area, and unprecedented. But when it comes to the whole situation of determining why that happened, I think you could look to a couple of things. Number one, I think you can look to the fact that Barack Obama and his campaign team have had an operation that never quit from the 2008 election. Community organizers know that you keep things going and you keep pumping things into your community in order to keep people engaged. And they were doing that in big ways with various things, everything from Obama phones to amnesty for the children of illegal aliens. In other words, they were playing Santa Claus. And they played Santa Claus to their base, kept them motivated, kept them moving forward. And that's something that, well, first and foremost, I think the Republicans try to do with various different things, but just aren't quite as good at it as the leftist Democrats are. But that notwithstanding, I think the other factor that happened was the fact that you just didn't count. And I think I talked about this before, that when polling was done, especially polling in Ohio, and we looked at that polling, and I even got pulled into it because I underestimated the depth and breadth of this particular voting block, and that was the Latino or Hispanic population voting block, which overwhelmingly went for Barack Obama, 70-30. I mean, it's not as much as the African American voting block, which is usually 95-98% Democrat, and is usually counted that way, and so that's already factored into most polling. Very little polling, I believe, could capture the true depth or breadth of Latino votes. And it showed nationally the breakdown was like 71% for Obama, 29% for Romney among Latino voters. But, you know, the one thing is oftentimes in polling, there are certain pockets of Latino or Hispanic voters that don't poll, either can't be reached or are unwilling to be surveyed. Now, oftentimes, Chuck, that's because they're here in the country illegally.
Yeah,
but let's not kid ourselves. Just because they were here in the country illegally didn't mean that they probably didn't vote. And I think that there's a significant of cross-section of that population of the illegal aliens who were very much voting up to and including Tuesday the 6th.
Well, we could sit around and speculate all day about what percentage of that Hispanic vote was actually eligible to vote. And you and I will never come up with the answer because nobody, no sociologist will ever ask that question because they will never get funding for it.
Right. Well, that's true.
And, you know, where all that funding for those kind of sociological surveys comes from is from government. And right now the government doesn't want that. That what they know is what this is a multi-pronged problem, Barry, in that everybody knows, as we talked about earlier this week, we do no longer have the replacement birth rate here in the United States of America, which means in order for the population to grow, you have to have immigration. Now, why do you have to have population growth in the United States? I think you know the answer to this. Why do you have to have?
Well, you have to have population growth if you're going to maintain a society.
Well, not only that, but what have we built here that requires that the bottom of the pyramid always grow?
An edifice to ourselves? No, go ahead and tell them, Jack.
Okay. It is the Ponzi scheme of our entitlement programs.
Yes, it is the retirement, the government-sponsored retirement systems.
The bottom of the pyramid has to continually grow to support the top of the pyramid, which is rapidly becoming a very large percentage of the population, which no longer is productive.
So in other words, we're going from a pyramid to a ziggurat.
Well, we're actually beginning to invert the pyramid.
That's even worse.
Yes, exactly. We are getting to the point where the pyramid is going to be balanced on its point rather than on its base. Now, in order to keep that immigration coming in, you can do it two ways. You can do it legally you basically can't do legal immigration than the numbers required. So you're basically the borders are wide open to the south. The people from the north, you know, Canadians are not fighting to move to the United States. I mean, let's face it. Are some illegals coming in from Canada? Yes, mostly spies from places like China and that kind of thing. I mean, I'm sure there's a few illegal immigrants from Canada, and I'm sure there's a few illegals that go from here to there. But our real problem is to the south, and that border is wide open. It has become less of a problem in the last 4 years because, Barry, we're not doing a lot of illegals go into the construction trade. Well, what aren't we doing right now? We're not building any new houses.
We're not building housing. That's right.
We're not building new buildings. So a lot of those people that came here illegally to go into the housing trades have taken what they earned and saved. And Mexicans and people from south of the border tend to be very industrious if you've ever been there. And they save a lot of money and they send a lot of money home. Well, they've withdrawn for a while. They've gone home. And now they're living where it costs a lot less to live with the money that they made up here. That's very nice for Mexico. It's not so hot for us. Because no longer are those people contributing to the Ponzi scheme of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the rest of the entitlement program. So there you have in a very short nutshell what the monster that we have created. And really, Barry... At this point, there's not much we can do about it because the fabric of society is such that if we simply closed off the borders, the entitlement programs would starve, which maybe not be such a bad thing, but it would start a, let's just say that there would be a certain amount of unrest if everybody, we suddenly, a la Greece, Spain, Ireland, Italy, Portugal, you know, the pigs countries.
Exactly.
Remember, the pigs countries, well, where it's gotten in the country in the worst shape was Greece.
Yes.
And basically Greece said we can no longer afford to maintain our welfare state. And look what's happened there. So that is exactly what everybody else can look forward to as the system begins to collapse. There's just no more money to be had.
Well, you know what they say, socialism works well until you run out of other people's money.
Thank you, Maggie.
And honestly, we're starting to come, they're going to call it a fiscal cliff or whatever, but we're starting to come to the realization that we have operated effectively on a alternative form of government in this country for a number of years, number of decades, called socialism. It's been slow, it's been creeping, it's been soft, but it's been socialism. Now, Chuck, the one thing... And we can talk about that a little bit more in the future, but I still want to focus back in on the numbers game here, because one thing was made absolutely clear on Tuesday, and I think you and I are both fairly elated by this idea. And that was the idea that a vote for anybody but Mitt Romney was not a vote for Barack Obama. Now, I've seen out on Facebook, I actually had somebody who friended me out of the blue a while back and now is all griping and complaining that if you voted for a third party, then you need to, you know, and he's not using nice language about it. Don't worry, I'm defriending you because you're proving yourself to be foolish. But the point is that, you know, it was all the fault of the folks voting for Gary Johnson that Obama took Ohio. Well, I want to laugh about this, Chuck, because I looked at the numbers from Ohio.
Yes. And, you should laugh.
And if you added up all the votes that went to Gary Johnson, that went to the Green Party candidate, the Socialist candidate, the Constitution Party candidate, the Independent candidates, and the other handful of folks who were on the ballot in Ohio, and added all those votes together and assumes that every last one of them would have been cast for Mitt Romney otherwise, Mitt Romney would have still lost Ohio. He would have still lost the popular vote in Ohio to Barack Obama and thus lost Ohio's 18 electoral votes. Okay, let's even take the analysis of this lunacy a little bit further. Let's say that by some stretch of the imagination, adding up all of those non-major party votes and giving them all to Mitt Romney, which is, I know, stretching credulity by a significant length, would have given Mitt Romney the state of Ohio. Well, you know what? 18 electoral votes would have changed the balance to where Barack Obama still would have had more than 270, and Mitt Romney would have still been about 60 votes, electoral votes short of Barack Obama's total. But I guess it's so magic in Ohio that had all those things gone the other way and Mitt Romney would have won Ohio, that magically he would have won all of the other battleground states that were being contested on Tuesday.
Well, isn't that written in Article 2 someplace that if as Ohio goes, so goes the election? In other words,
you would think.
One Ohio, then automatically Virginia, Colorado, all the battlegrounds, Florida, would have to be constitutionally awarded to Mitt Romney, and therefore he would have won. Barry, the math that people do in elections sometimes just stuns me.
Well, the point is that these are people who are convinced of the facts. Even though, or as our friend Mike Perica would have said, it isn't the things you don't know, it's the things that you know that just aren't so that's the problem.
Oh, absolutely. Because the day after the election, I sat down real quickie. This is real easy to do, folks. All you do is look at all the votes cast for all the different candidates, and you do a little rational analysis nationwide. And you look at how many votes were cast for Gary Johnson, how many votes for the Green Party, how many votes for the Constitution Party, how many votes for the Socialists, how many votes for Roseanne Barr, how many votes for this, how many votes for that. And you add them all up, and you split them the way they would have gone. For instance, you and I at lunch today talked about the fact that a very conservative way of splitting up Gary Johnson's votes would have been 50-50. 50% Mitt Romney, 50% Barack Obama.
Where really, since those were very libertarian voters voting for Gary Johnson, it would have probably been like 65-35 Obama based upon an affinity for issues.
Exactly. But just for fun, well, let's split them 50-50. And then the Green Party, well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Mitt Romney would have been lucky to get one Green Party voter to vote for him. Roseanne Barr, nobody who voted for Roseanne Barr was going to vote for Mitt Romney.
No.
Nobody who was going to vote Socialist Party was going to vote for Mitt Romney. Now, to be realistic, nobody that voted in the Constitution Party would have voted for Barack Obama. So we'll give all 111,000 votes
that went to the Constitution Party candidate to Mitt Romney.
So what you find is that when you split it up, and hand all the votes out, if you take this meme that somehow a vote for a third party was a vote for Barack Obama, it turns out that you're absolutely wrong, because what would have happened is that Barack Obama would have won by a wider margin had none of the third parties been in place.
Absolutely. And so, you know what, Chuck? I love our friends out there, but for every one of you who said that to our face, I really would like to hear your apology sooner rather than later. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a little disgusted by this because, first of all, you have to understand something, that people convince themselves of some very, very wrong ideas, and then they persecute others for not following their ideas, and then when they're proven wrong, they just act like it never happened. But this did happen, Chuck, and it happened, and the data shows very clearly that the predictions and the accusations were totally off target. No matter which way you slice it, ladies and gentlemen, a vote for any of the non-major party candidates, I don't care which one you voted for, was not a vote for Barack Obama, according to the Mitt Romney supporters. So, you know, I'll be looking to see my inbox fill up with all those apologies, Chuck.
I hope you're not holding your breath, because I don't want to see you turn blue.
No, blue is not my color, so I'm not going to be holding my breath there. But I just wanted to debunk that particular false notion very clearly, ladies and gentlemen, that you can't to come up with that kind of, shall we say, challenge to somebody exercising their rights of conscience, especially coming from those who they were coming from for us, Chuck, which were evangelical Christians, I believe that some repentance is in order. Now, if they just want to repent to God and not repent or not ask me for forgiveness for spewing that kind of nonsense, that's fine. But the point is that, you know, it's one of these issues that we really need to deal with as a body of believers, and that is not, you know, many of us who are a very conservative, Calvinistic backgrounds, like Chuck and I are, oftentimes are accused of wanting salvation by politics. However, in the actual exercise of the matter, it seems like it's those who are accusing us of wanting salvation by politics who are the first to lose their collective mental capacity and start saying, well, if you vote for a third party, it's a vote for Barack Obama because you've got to vote for Mitt Romney.
Well, okay, Barry, this is the worst election I can remember, in which messianic language was used by people who were accusing me of looking for a political messiah.
Yes.
Yeah. And by that, I'm and also one other thing I want to make clear before we go into that. Those of you who accuse me of quote unquote waiting for the perfect candidate, I actually at the last minute voted for a candidate I had no intention of voting for, a third-party candidate. And the reason I did it was I thought in terms of that waiting for the perfect candidate, I took this candidate at his word about some changes in certain positions that I hold near and dear, that I have minimum standards on. Again, Barry, as we talked about over and over and over, you're waiting for the perfect candidate, you're looking for the preacher in chief,
I heard many of those same things coming out of the mouths of some supposedly Christian evangelicals.
The fact is, you and I have talked over and over and over, no, we're not waiting for the perfect candidate. We're waiting for someone who has a minimum biblical standard and meets that standard. And I believe I voted for someone who met my minimum biblical standard by repenting of some things that he had done as a United States representative. Now, I took someone at their word. Could I have been wrong? Yes. Would I have been worse off than had I voted for Mitt Romney? No. Because I know that Mitt Romney, essentially, adopted a number of positions between 2008 and 2012 that he knew cost him the nomination in 2008. In other words, what I'm saying is that Mitt Romney lied through his teeth about his positions on certain key things. For instance, in 2008, Mitt Romney was a greenie. He was against coal, expanding coal and gas power production. Suddenly in 2011 and 12, he's all for it. Why? Because it cost him votes.
Of course.
Mitt Romney in 2011 and 12 suddenly became pro-life. In 2008, he was a big supporter of Planned Parenthood. In 2011 and 12, I think Roe v. Wade should be overturned and Planned Parenthood should be defunded. You can go up and down the spectrum. Where was the talk about Mitt Romney's stand on the Second Amendment? He has a lousy record. He's an anti-gunner. Did anybody want to talk about that? No. What we got, though, Barry, were declarations by people that I used to have a whole lot of respect for, like David Barton, saying things like giving Romney a clean bill of health on his Christian orthodoxy. Now, someone who has that large of a historical record of the United States should know something about Mormonism. And I'll be quite honest. What David Barton should have said was, I'm not answering that question. But instead, he chose to play theologian and say, no, I know about Mormonism, and I give them a clean bill of health on their Christian orthodoxy. Well, he either lied or he doesn't know a thing about Mormonism. That's the bottom line. So the fact is, I want to get this, I'm waiting for the perfect candidate thing out of the way. Didn't wait for the perfect candidate, voted for the guy that was closest to me and where I stood.
Well, okay. And that's fine. But the point is we had called everybody who were believers to go to God, pray about it, look to his word, see what his standards were for biblical leadership, and then vote your conscience. And, well, I think that we found out that voting your conscience didn't create such an uproar that it threw an election, because although some people are out there claiming right now all the third party voters gave it to Barack Obama, the data proves totally otherwise. Now, you know, Chuck, there were some other races that were going on the ballot too, especially here in Ohio, and a couple and people, you know, locally, you know, who won most of the incumbents at the congressional level and at the state house level, all got back into their offices, pretty much standard. One race that didn't come out the way many people predicted it, and what we did, you know, we thought was going to turn out a different way, was the U.S. Senate race with Sherrod Brown and Josh Mandel, which really wasn't all that close. And it's a shame, but that was the will of the voters, and so that's what we have as our Senator Brown for another 6 years. But the upside of the whole night, at least in Ohio, Charles, was that state issues 1 and 2, which we had given negative endorsements to on this program, both failed by large margins. The people of the state of Ohio didn't buy the rhetoric on state issue 2 about fair elections, because that wasn't what state issue 2 was about in any way, shape, or form. And honestly, when people got into the polling place and saw 2.5 screens, if you use the electronics, 2.5 screens full of text, usually what's going to happen is people are going to vote no. Because if you can't read it, get simple, understand it, be comprehensive in a little sense, you're not going to support it. And that's what happened with issue 2. Issue 1, people decided, no, we don't need a constitutional convention in the state of Ohio for anything. I think we're doing just fine. Thank you very much. So issues 1 and 2 go down to defeat, and so we called those correctly, even though we kind of missed on our prognostication on the outcome of the presidential race. Like I said, I would like to be eating crow. I'll eat some humble pie that we missed that prediction, But we'll have to wait to see about later future candidates and whether or not they're actually going to uphold constitutional values.
Well, Barry, what's going to be interesting about this is, this is a sidebar. Here we've just overwhelmingly rejected a new Ohio Constitutional Convention, and our state legislatures are now floating the possibility of trying to call a national constitutional convention. Absolutely the last thing that we need. So keep an eyeball on that, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, if you listen to the show, we are strong opponents of a new constitutional convention at the national level and at the state level. Right now, anyone who would look at that, I would think that maybe anyone who's thinking, any Ohio Republican legislator who looks at the last election results and thinks that they could sneak by with a national convention and get a bunch of conservative stuff through is perhaps dreaming, maybe a pipe dream. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Now, you know, Chuck, there were some other things that were going on in the country besides the presidential race, and some of that was kind of a mixed bag. In some states, I believe in Colorado and in I'm trying to remember the other state where recreational marijuana use was legalized. It was Colorado, and can you remember what the other state was?
I thought it was Oregon.
Possibly Oregon. So recreational marijuana usage was legalized. In the states of Maine and Maryland, homosexual pairings being given the legitimacy of saying it's a marriage were actually passed by popular vote on their ballots. So we have the first two states in the nation who actually, by a voter referendum or a voter initiative, gave us same-sex marriage in those states. Now, in the other states that have a form of that, whether it's civil unions or something else, it was either done by legislative enactment or it was done by a court order. These are the first states to actually pass it by popular vote. So, you know, there were some other downsides. But on upsides, Charles, and this is one that escaped most people's notice, and that is that in the state of Alabama, a man who actually, I believe, would meet the qualifications for a biblical ruler as laid down in Scripture, actually won his election. Now, this was an interesting election because this gentleman had held this position before, and he had lost it by being taken down from the bench. I'm talking about Roy Moore, the Ten Commandments judge, who won on Tuesday his race to become the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Now, newly elected Chief Justice Moore said early on that he is going to acknowledge God, which we have to interpret means the Ten Commandment monuments may be coming back to the Alabama courthouse.
Oh, by the way, the other state that passed marijuana legalization?
Yes.
Was Washington.
Washington state. Okay, Oregon, Washington, we were close there.
Yeah, Barry, I would look forward to Judge Moore reigniting this controversy. Good for him. Please put it back in. I have actually seen that monument twice. I saw it while it was in the courthouse there in Alabama. I went in the weekend before it was hauled away for the big rally down there. And then it was actually brought around on a truck, and we made arrangements at my church, and it was actually brought to my church in Westerville, Ohio. And it's a beautiful monument. The thing weighs, you know, it's massive. It's a massive piece of granite. It's beautiful. And hopefully, I think Roy Moore still owns the thing.
Yeah.
The fact that it's been removed illegally by federal authorities, notwithstanding. And so it could be set right back in its place. Now, who knows? I will not be critical of Roy Moore if he doesn't do it right away. Roy Moore has proven over and over and over again that he has a plan, that he is a long-term thinker, not a short-term thinker, and that he has something worked out to make that that monument glorify God to the maximum in some way. And if it's in his plan, he'll do it.
Absolutely. And the other piece of good news, and I kind of take a little personal pride in this one, Charles, but for our listeners who know, we teach a class called Institute on the Constitution, where we train normal everyday citizens like our listeners to understand and appreciate what our founders gave us in the Constitution, how it was put together, how it reflects and adheres to biblical truth, and how we can, as citizens, work to restore constitutional faithfulness in our elected offices. Well, back last fall, I taught a class here in our local area, and we had folks from groups here in Ohio, and of course I live on the border, so from West Virginia as well. One of those students from West Virginia actually took what he learned in class, and he filed to run for the State House of Delegates in West Virginia. It was his first attempt at elected office, Charles. And he had a primary. He filed as a Republican. He had a primary, which he won, a three-way primary, and he won his primary. Well, as you know, West Virginia is mainly a Democratic state, and the district is really not that much different that he was running in. But he ran, and he had a Democrat opponent. It was for an open seat because they had redistricted and had changed the district up a little bit. And on Tuesday night, Jim Butler, who was a first-time IOTC graduate and a first-time candidate, will be sworn in January as the newest delegate to the West Virginia State Legislature. So we do have a biblically faithful constitutionalist who is going to be going into the State House, who is a graduate of IOTC.
And congratulations on that.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Jim and his family are just top-notch folks. They're involved in the Tea Party movement. You know, he basically runs a logging business. That's his daily trade. So, you know, he's pretty much a laborer and a small businessman. But he just decided that it was time to step up and do something, and he did it. And sure enough, his message resonated with the voters of the district, and now he can carry it down to Charleston and hopefully be able to encourage even more. Honestly, I hope that I get a call from him saying, hey, can you come to Charleston and do an IOTC class for some legislators? I think it would be fantastic to do that.
Yeah, because it's not that far from where you are. It's, what, 50 miles or something?
Yeah, it's about that. It's not. I'd be willing to make the trip. Let's put it that way. But you know what, Chuck? Because I think it's time for many of our elected officials to understand the Constitution that they are swearing on an oath to uphold and defend and to follow. Honestly, I'd love to go to D.C. and teach IOTC along with our friend Pastor Whitney and others who are out there in the D.C. metro area, and possibly go and teach Speaker John Boehner a little bit about the Constitution. And I think that we have a situation where John Boehner, who is the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, really is showing that he's not as constitutionally literate as he should be. And what I'm kind of segueing a little bit on this, Chuck, because we've got an article that was on NBC Politics website of NBC News. And, of course, we'll take it with a grain of salt, but this was posted on Thursday evening, where and it's a transcript of an interview with Speaker John Boehner, who basically is signaling in no uncertain terms that Republican efforts to derail, defund, or repeal the Obamacare mandate will not go forward in the next Congress, saying that, as I quote, it's the law of the land, which shows Speaker Boehner's absolute lack of understanding of the Constitution, his absolute lack of understanding that without constitutional warrant, it is no law, no matter what John Roberts had to say about it, and the fact that even with a passage by the Supreme Court, it's still Congress has the authority and the responsibility and the duty to go back and undo the damage that's been done. But Speaker Boehner has decided that, no, we're not going to do that. Said that, so he was asking in an exchange with ABC News' Diane Sawyer. And he's basically was asked, you said next year you would repeal the health care vote. Is that still your mission? And here's Boehner's quote. Well, I think the election changes that. It's pretty clear that the president was reelected. Obamacare is the law of the land. And he goes, well, I think there are parts of the health care law that are going to be very difficult to implement and very expensive. Well, okay, but there's a big problem here in that if you know that for a fact, and if you had any sense of the Constitution, you would know that your first job would be to repeal that unconstitutional law if you are facing what we're calling the fiscal cliff.
Oh, well, and Barry, as we've said here over and over and over, John Boehner never had any real intention of repealing Obamacare.
No, well, of course, one of the spokesmen for Boehner's office after this came out tried to put a spin on it and basically said, well, while Obamacare is the law of the land, well, there's another constitutional ignorance comment exactly. coming out. It is costing us jobs and threatening our health care. This is Kevin Smith, who's the communications director for John Boehner. And he says this, Speaker Boehner and House Republicans remain committed to repealing the law. That's not what John Boehner said. John Boehner was very clear that basically the election changes all that, and Obamacare is the law of the land. And while, you know, it's going to be expensive and difficult to implement, we're going to have to, like, look at that as we're negotiating away through this budget. That doesn't sound to me like a commitment to repealing the law.
I like the fact that Kevin Smith is basically saying 180 degrees out of phase what Boehner said.
Yes, absolutely.
And you and I both know why that happened. Because the minute this became public, conservatives who, you know, they had just basically cowed into supporting a lousy presidential candidate were saying, who are now hopping mad about it, were saying, how would you like to keep your job in 2 years?
That's right. There is a call that's being made by many conservative leaders, Brent Bozell, the Media Research Center, Marjorie Dannenfelser of the Susan B. Anthony List, and others have come out and basically put out an ultimatum that, number one, that they need to follow a certain prescribed path these conservative leaders want them to run, which I think it's interesting, Chuck, because we read some of these items on their wish list. None of them was adhered to the Constitution, which, frankly, would be the first starting point.
Well, that's the funniest thing, Barry. The 10 things. Defund Obamacare. Well, okay, that's repeal. Not defund, repeal.
Repeal, yes.
They're being realistic in that they won't get a repeal past the Senate. I get that. But reintroduction of last year's cut, cap, and balance budget plan. Again, it's economic sleight of hand. This is not going to solve the problem, and we'll get into that a little later. Permanent ban on earmarks. Give me a break. Earmarks are not the problem. Earmarks are things that congressmen swoop in and take in an already passed budget. They have nothing to do with budgetary overloads. They have to do with the fact that the budget's already been passed. Now everybody's getting the pork. Is it bad? Yeah. Does it really contribute to the problem? Anybody that tells you so really doesn't understand the basic economics of the whole mess. Tax reform. Okay. How is that constitutional? It isn't really. And embracing social conservatism. Well, folks, look, there is a survey that was done by Breitbart and Judicial Watch the day after the election. And here are the numbers. 71% of voters agree that big government leads to corruption, and 85% of voters are concerned about corruption. But voters do not trust either party to clean up Washington. This is what we said, why 11 million voters sat home from last time. Why bother? It doesn't matter, as it didn't matter in the last 4 years or the 4 years before or the 4 years before that. Okay, 77% of voters believe the media was biased in favor of one candidate. You think? Really?
Possibly so, yes.
61% of voters embrace Arizona-style immigration laws, including 40% of Hispanics. Well, those are the 40 that voted for Romney, apparently. 76% of voters and a majority within every minority group favor photo ID for voting. This is an indication that this meme that's out there, that the Republicans need to drop all these social conservative things, is absolute dribble. They need to embrace them and actually say, this is what we stand for. Barry, I'm going to go real quick into this because sure. We have other things we want to cover.
Absolutely.
But someone that neither one of us care much for, a guy by the name of Hugh Hewitt, came out with just the worst sycophantic, nonsensical commentary that I heard today on the radio. This man, frankly, is someone I have very little respect for. He's a Nixon apologist. In fact, he served on Nixon's staff. He just says some of the dumbest things, like, for instance, I remember when Arnold Schwarzenegger won the election there in California as governor, beating after the recall election. And he said, you conservatives are going to love Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor of California.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, I continue to ask, when will that begin? Here's what he had to say about this. And Barry, I didn't know whether to laugh, cry, or throw up. Congratulations to Mitt Romney for having conducted a disciplined and idealistic campaign of great consequence for the country, even if he did not prevail. He is such a good and generous man that the defeat is very hard on all of the people that saw him in a combination of talents that the country desperately needed. Nature intervened after he had successfully overcome all the powers of incumbency. But he and his team, and especially his remarkable and wonderful family, sacrificed so much and worked so hard that it's very difficult not to feel disillusioned with a country so unwilling to confront its deep problems and trust a virtuous man to lead it. Tell me, what are the ideals and virtues that Mitt Romney possesses?
The ideal of he wants to be president, and the virtue of he could fund his own campaign.
He's willing to say anything, basically, and fund his own campaign to be able to get to the job. Barry, I don't understand what this nature intervened after he had successfully...
That's saying that he's blaming Mitt Romney's loss on Hurricane Sandy.
Which is a patent absurdity.
It is. It's absolutely absurd. But again, that's the reason why we don't give a whole lot of attention or time to Hugh Hewitt. Yes. So I think we pointed out the illogical nature of this, but you know what, Chuck, for many of us, and especially, you know, you mentioned the social conservative leaders who are calling on the leadership in the House, and they're calling on the Republicans to do all this stuff in policy. I think they sent their message to the wrong person. Well, at least according to Speaker John Boehner, because I believe we have a little clip from John Boehner basically laying out a little different view of how he sees who's in charge.
Yes.
But if we're all striving for a solution, I'm confident that we can get there. Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led, not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Americans. We want you to lead, not as a liberal or conservative, but as President of the United States of America. We want you to succeed. Let's challenge ourselves to find the common ground that has eluded us. Let's rise above the dysfunction and do the right thing together for our country. Thank you all.
Okay, so basically John Boehner is all but saying, okay, Mr. President, we're ready to be led. Okay, that's okay if you're just talking about yourself as a citizen and understanding that you know, the president is the chief executive of the country. It's not okay if you're the Speaker of the House of Representatives and you haven't read your Constitution, which basically says that all legislative authority is vested in the Congress, the House and the Senate, and that according to our founders, the legislature is supposed to be the most powerful body, and they're supposed to set the agenda. They're supposed to do the leading when it comes to doing the heavy lifting of the policy decisions for the country.
And Barry, I listened to that thing and I'm like, who's he kissing up to? He's not really kissing up to Obama. Is he kissing up to the middle of the road voter? Because what he did there was basically just say, okay, lead, 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 lead. That the president's job is not to lead. It's to govern.
Yes, it is. That's right.
And it is to enforce the laws of the United States of America. It's not to just be the decider in chief. I think as wasn't that Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
He's the decider in chief. His job is not to set policy, except within the boundaries of his constitutional authority. And that's the whole reason why there are powers like the executive order, which has been so grossly abused by this president and so ignored by the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Well, but now, you know what? If that's considered leadership, I think the country is in trouble. Because if John Boehner is basically saying, like, well, Mr. President, you lead, and we're ready to be led. I think that phrase may go down in history as John Boehner's epitaph as Speaker of the House of Representatives. We're ready to be led. Yes, and he's leading you around by the nose. We've got that, John. Thanks so much. Now, Chuck, we also have another clip from somebody else who sadly will not be joining the next Congress because as he ran in the Republican primary for president and was not successful in keeping Mitt Romney from getting the nomination, he gave up the chance to rerun for his congressional seat, and therefore, actually somebody who's more of a statesman and who honestly understands his Constitution much better and the needs and the problems of our country much better than John Boehner, I think, ever will. We've also got a clip from Representative Ron Paul. And I think that our listeners would be well served to hear this clip from Representative Ron Paul.
Ron Paul hits all the high spots, everything we've been talking about now for over a year on this radio program and several years before that. Take a close listen, ladies and gentlemen, to soon-to-be former Congressman Ron Paul.
Congressman, first off, did you like what you were hearing from Boehner and the Republican leadership on the fiscal cliff?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things in there, you know, I could say they sounded good, but the problem is there's no credibility. What I run into when I'm going around the country is they don't believe, the people that I talk to generally don't believe anything they hear. You know, they just don't trust it. Say, somebody said, oh yeah, we want to work together. Yes, fine. Oh yes, we won't raise taxes. They don't believe that. It just goes on, and they're just looking for the truth, and they say, well, all we need is a little compromise. Well, nobody expects that because they don't admit the truth. And the truth is that we're broke. And how you compromise? The only way you can compromise is on agreeing on what you're going to cut. But instead, they're trying to find out how they're going to agree on what they're going to protect. So I don't think I've heard the answer. You know, they talk about this fiscal cliff, but
right.
I actually, in my mind, work with the assumption that we're already over the cliff. We're just wondering how we're going to land.
Really? So you're working under the assumption that we are not going to get this solved?
No, it's unsolvable because you have to cut spending. And, I mean, the conservative candidate for president said we should increase the spending by $2 trillion for military and more drones.
Right, and that was one of the reasons, I know, Congressman, that you did not go ahead and endorse Governor Romney.
We don't need another war. I mean, we were broke. So.
Well, Congressman, is there, you know, the matter is that this is a minority, what you're espousing is a minority opinion right now, because most believe and hope that the two sides will come together with some sort of deal. Do you believe, is there any circumstance, I want to talk about taxes, any circumstance under which you believe the GOP and Republicans would accept any type of tax increase?
Yeah, I do, but they're not in Washington. They're outside of Washington, and I talk about it all the time. And the few people I could work with, like a Dennis Kucinich and others, we had coalitions. We agreed to come together, say, on a militarism, you know, to why do we need to spend more than everybody else put together? So you bring coalitions together of progressives and libertarian conservatives and say, yes, we have to, you know, cut across the board. But right now they say this compromise on preservation of certain programs, but you have to get together and bring people together of different viewpoints. And I don't call that compromise because, I don't think anybody should sacrifice their principles, but there's no reason in the world why you can't get progressives and libertarians to agree on some of these cuts that are the spending we don't need.
Well, Congressman, I mean, there's, you know, there's your view on this, and what you're saying is that you need some more credibility in order to agree to any type of deal here on the fiscal cliff. And, you know, people have talked about how there are these Ron Paul Republicans, right? And some of them have gained ground, in the House, for instance, in Kentucky, in Michigan, even in Texas, Senator-elect. Ted Cruz, what would they need to see, including you, in order to come together and agree and approve on some sort of deal?
Well, as long as they moved in the direction of less government, I mean, maybe taking their oath of office seriously, looking at Article 1, Section 8, and they swear to uphold the Constitution, only do those things that are authorized by the Constitution. Well, that's long gone. So we're so far gone. We're over the cliff. We can't get enough people in Congress in the next 5-10 years who will do the wise things. So we have to prepare for, they haven't already fallen off the fiscal cliff. It's like what's going on in Greece. Every day you hear of a solution and things pop up, but they're in debt. They spend too much money, and then the people go out in the street and they demonstrate. Just think, Romney was hit because he was opposed. You know, one issue he was correct on, he opposed the bailouts, and the people in the Midwest voted against it. Oh, we have to be taken care of. So that vote was sort of like what we're laughing at in Greece. Oh, all those 80,000 people out there, they don't want anything cut. They won't compromise. Well, it's the people that are that way, and that's why our revolution is significant. We're trying to change people's minds, and that's why changing the minds of young people is so important.
But Congressman, I don't think the people, though, want to see us coming off the fiscal cliff, though.
Well, yeah, I think there are plenty of us, and probably most of your audience would like us to see to come to census. But if you look at the numbers, and if you look at the way pure democracy works, see, pure democracy is dangerous. The majority dictates against the minority. So right now, the majority are receiving a check. So when you get a vote, and that's why people were sort of surprised with these conditions that this president could get reelected. But that is a bad sign in that there are more on the receiving end. People don't want anything cut. They want all the bailouts to come. They want the Fed to keep printing the money. And they believe, see, they don't believe we've gone off the cliff or that we're close to going off the cliff. They think that we can patch it over, that we can somehow come up with magic solution. But you can't have a budgetary solution if you don't change what the role of government should be. As long as you think we have to police the world and run this welfare state, all we're going to argue about is who's going to, get the loot, who gets the money.
I mean, I know you decided not to run again because you were focused on your presidential campaign, but is that why you quit Congress?
No, I think people had enough of me. I don't have much confidence in the political system, and never did. My goal has always been to change people's mind so as long as people demand more government, they're going to get it. So government reflects the people, and that's why I am excited about going to the college campuses, and I will continue to do that. That's where I was able to get a lot of support, and they're saying, I agree with you. We don't need more government. We want more freedom. We want to be able to keep our own money. We want sound money. And if you had sound money, you don't have deficits because you can't print money.
All I can say to that, Barry, is wow.
We're losing a statesman in Congress. It's just all there is to it. Somebody who actually gets it and who's not afraid to say, listen, we can't do this kind of stuff anymore. He's right also about the fact that if people want more government, they will get it. And honestly, we're going to get more of it.
And I would love to do some follow-up commentary, but of course,
we are out.
So, I would say join us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies